This is Ron Orl, your host, and you're listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast, where we delve into all the latest news related to activist investing and M&A. And I'm super excited to report today that I will be speaking to Wachtell Lipton and Rosenkatz partner David Katz, who is also an adjunct professor at New York University School of Law and co-chair of the Board of Advisors at the NYU Law Institute for Corporate Governance and Finance. And equally important, David and his team at Wachtell have for years and years advised corporations involved some of the most high-profile and contentious activist battles. Most recently, they've been working on Canadian National, and David's worked on Tegna and Public Storage. So we're super excited to have David speak with us. Welcome, David.
Ron, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And the companies you cited, those are companies that our team here has worked on. I haven't worked on each of them, but they're all very important deals for our clients.
Okay. All right, cool. So today we're going to talk a bit about the Securities and Exchange Commission's big push for disclosure under Gary Gensler. And the SEC just proposed something I know that Wachtell has been urging it to change for over a decade, probably longer. And that is to have these kind of insurgent activist investors disclose their positions faster when they cross the 5% ownership threshold of a company's stock. So the SEC just proposed requiring disclosure within 5 days of crossing the 5% threshold, which is shorter than the 10 days that the SEC currently requires. And I believe I'm correct to say that Wachtell and other major corporate advisor law firms have wanted it to be shorter than 5 days, maybe 2 days. But it seems like from the corporate perspective, this is an improvement. And there's also a big derivatives disclosure aspect of it, which I want to get into as well. But first, I thought maybe, David, you could just kind of talk to us a little about, I know something you guys have been advocating for a while. You guys had a petition for rulemaking on the subject. Just tell us a little about your role and your push for this over the years.
We've been pushing for this for quite some time, and we think it's an important change. I actually think this is one of the areas where people think of the United States as being the leader in this type of regulation, market regulation. And in fact, it was when it adopted the predecessor for the current rules back in 1968. But a long time's gone by, and a number of other countries have put forward much stricter disclosure requirements. It has not stopped activism in their countries. In fact, it's just made more parity in market information. I would say, for example, in some of the countries, getting to 3% requires a disclosure, and they can't buy more than the transaction that brings them over 3% until they've made disclosure. Wow. And in some cases, there's actually a waiting period after that happens. What this does is it's better. I think a shorter period is very doable and would be even better. But I think part of it will be is the SEC, when it does this, if the SEC changes the rules in such a way so that people cannot buy more shares until after they've made the disclosure, I think that that could have the impact to some extent of leveling the playing field with some of these other jurisdictions. If it does not do that and still allows people to buy during this window period before they have to make their initial disclosure, I think that it will force people to do less effective transactions to get there because they'd have to do it in a shorter period of time. But an activist still would have the loophole to work with. They just wouldn't have 10 days. They'd have 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, activists have complained that this will make it more expensive from the accumulate the positions that they need to justify launching the campaigns that they feel are necessary to improve shareholder value at these companies. I know companies have talked about how this is something, you know, they need to know that an activist is accumulating so they can respond faster. And Gary Gensler seems to be focused on another constituency, which is rank and file investors. That he sees it as being unfair for, you know, the investor who doesn't know that Carl Icahn, I'm just throwing him in as an example, I'm not picking on him particularly, but Carl Icahn is accumulating and he crossed the 5% and that, you know, they're selling their shares. Maybe they're selling it to Carl Icahn, who knows, and not knowing that he's there. And when they cross the 5% stake and it's disclosed, there'll be a big bump in the share that they weren't able to take advantage of, you know, not knowing that the activist had been accumulating. So do you agree that it was unfair to the rank and file investors? And what about the companies? This is something you feel it's important, companies to know that the activist is accumulating.
Gensler doesn't talk just about the rank and file investor. He's talking about information asymmetry. And I think that doesn't just cover the rank and file. There's a lot of others that would be covered by that, that including many institutional investors that do program trading or otherwise, who may get caught in this type of situation. The bottom line is that I think whether an activist has 5% or 10%, if they've got good ideas, they're going to put pressure on the company. The fact that the stock may go up after an activist announces the accumulation of their position by definition means that people think that the activist is going to have a positive effect. In some cases, activists have filed 13Ds and then sold down relatively quickly thereafter because they figure they've gotten more gain from getting in than otherwise. The information asymmetry is, you know, Bill Ackman was the one who said this would put him out of business if the SEC were to go in this direction. It's not going to put Bill Ackman out of business, not going to put any activists out of business. It may make it a little bit more difficult for them to make quite as much money in a particular position, but they still are able to accumulate the shares. They still have disclosure requirements. They still are going to be able to put pressure on companies. It just means that they're going to have to tell the world what they're doing at an earlier stage. And I think that, frankly, that's helpful to the markets as a whole, not just the public companies whose securities are being traded, but the markets have better information and can make better judgments. Maybe Carl Icahn buys, there's a 10% bump. Maybe if Jeff Smith buys, there's a 15% bump. But the bottom line is they get the benefit of that bump by owning the shares already. And why should they take that away from other market participants who, if they knew about the accumulation, would in fact be holding out for a higher price or perhaps not even trading the security at all?
One of the advisors to activists, who I also am sure that you know about, had suggested to me like, oh, companies don't need this additional disclosure. They have sophisticated stock watch services that they know that the activists are accumulating before below 5%. But one of the things I was not so sure about is the ability of companies to identify early on that an activist is accumulating a large derivatives position. So I thought that that was a really interesting part of the proposal. And I know that the SEC has a separate 10B whole derivatives regime proposal going on, but let's just focus. And they have, there's a 5% threshold in that and some different dollar denomination thresholds for disclosure and derivatives. But let's just talk about what they introduced with the 13D derivatives. And so this is really fascinating. It said basically the way I interpreted it, and tell me if I got this right, is that if you own cash settled equity swaps, they consider that to be the equivalent of beneficial ownership, which means that if you own a 5% cash held swap position, basically you would be required to file a 13D, even if you don't own any shares. Or it sounds like if you own maybe a combination, let's say 2% common equity and 3% cash held equity swaps, maybe you would have to file a 13D as well. I've been seeing an increasing number of activist investors, particularly Elliott Management, accumulating larger and larger derivatives positions, sometimes saying that they're the second largest shareholder in the company. In one case I can think of, where that would mean they'd have to own 10% of the company, but there's never was a 13D disclosure. So, tell me what impact just having this derivatives disclosure aspect of it is. And I don't know that I feel like in other jurisdictions also, that was interesting what you brought up. There are, we get to know much earlier that an activist is accumulating derivatives.
And the derivatives are, again, this is an area where a number of other Western European or even Asian and some other North American jurisdictions do cut down on that. Look, the derivatives are an ability to do indirectly what you can't do directly. And what the SEC rule would do if it's adopted, it would call a spade a spade. If you're doing something indirectly, and if you'd have to report it, if you did it directly, you should have to report it if you did it indirectly. And where that line gets drawn is going to be a lot of a back and forth, and there may be some controversy in it at the end of the day. But if the activist is accumulating with the idea that he or she is going to put pressure on the company to change its strategy, they should have to make disclosure to the street. By the same token, if they're just a beneficial owner and they're investing with no control purpose, et cetera, and can file a 13G, they can file a 13G. But most of these activists, because of what their game plans are, cannot file 13Gs. And it makes absolute common sense to include the derivatives as part of the beneficial ownership count, because it's simply another way, if the stock goes up, they make a bunch of money if they own the derivative. And these derivatives can usually be very easily converted as well. So it really is an attempt to close a loophole. I do want to note, that people say, well, public companies don't need this. They can always get a stock watch service. Stock watch services are more of an art than a science. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're very good at what they do. They look at a lot of numbers. They may know brokers, But at the end of the day, the best that they can usually do is a guess. Mm-hmm. And it's based on what broker's trading, who's holding the securities, all sorts of things like that. Mm-hmm. And there are many activists that are very good at concealing that type of stuff. And that's what, you know, that more power to them working within the rules. What the 13D changes will do is they'll level the playing field to some mm-hmm. extent so that somebody doesn't show up with 27% of a public company one day and right, say, right. you know, you need to do X because I own 27% of the stock. They might still be able to go out on day one and say, I own 5% of the stock. You should do this. And if you're not going to do it, I'm going to buy more stock and force you to do it. That's fine. But do it in the open air where people can react and people know what's going on. And the market as a whole can make a judgment instead of a market acting on bad information because it can't make that judgment.
So one activist investor has suggested to me that the derivatives, you know, they like to accumulate large derivatives positions because then they can approach the company privately in a position of strength, saying that, you know, we have this huge position in derivatives and that they can talk to the management of the company without, and this is a quote, you know, the management won't circle the wagons with, you know, all the advisors that will advise it. And they said that this will now bring it into the public sphere where it'll be more aggressive kind of back and forth between companies and activists. You know, there'll be reporters like me writing about it and there'll be, you know, misinterpretations and it'll become more a hostile environment. So what do you say to that, that they, you know, they feel like they can approach companies privately?
It's a nice story, but, you know, maybe I'm playing, you know, the joke about the playing on the world's smallest violin. I don't have a lot of sympathy for mm-hmm. them. The rules are what the rules are, you know, whether it's 5%, 3%, 7%, you know, they're always going to make an argument that they want more flexibility. It doesn't put them out of business. It doesn't stop them from buying the derivatives. It just says that when you make your disclosure, you have to disclose your derivative position too.
Right.
And
right.
frankly, instead of having 10 days to do this, it gives them five. Right. And, you know, the bottom line is once they go above the 5%, the public should know and the company should know. And yet they're still giving them 5 days to play games in the stock. My own view would be we give them 5 days or 10 days, but the trade that takes them over 5%, you should freeze them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at least everybody's going to be operating on a more level playing field. I don't buy this whole thing about, you know, the other thing that the reason they're using derivatives is they're trying to get around HSR. Which
oh,
you can
use
derivatives. And, you know, it is call a spade. And it's not going to put Carl Icahn out of business. God, if it would put a Carl Icahn out of business, maybe we would have gotten this adopted 10 years ago. But it's not going to put Carl out of business. Is it going to make it more difficult for some activists? Yes. Is it going to put Elliott out of business or Starboard out of business or Jana out of business or a bunch of other people who are very good at what they do out of business? Absolutely not. It changes the leverage to some extent, but frankly, I think it breaks it into a more level playing field. Instead of having somebody show up with a bunch of stock, the market now knows that there's been accumulation. They know mm-hmm. who it is. They mm-hmm. know under 13D what their purpose is because item right. 4 requires that to be right. disclosed. And then right. the market can make its judgments.
Right. So, I mean, do you agree with my thesis that this is, we're seeing more and more of activists using derivatives to accumulate shares? I mean, in some level, it's hard to tell, but.
It's not a new phenomenon, Ron. I think it okay. may have become more apparent recently. Mm-hmm. And because it's easier to trade derivatives than it used to be, you know, I think you see somewhat more of it, but I think it has always been there in the past. Michael Milken used derivatives quite a bit in his heyday to circumvent disclosure obligations. So it's not a new concept.
Okay. So the one other aspect that I thought was interesting is the SEC once again tried to tackle something that they've been kind of wrangling with, I feel, for decades. And, you know, periodically they do something. And this is this kind of wolf pack idea that the activists are tipping each other and they're really acting as a group. And so there's a provision in the proposal that says the SEC has proposed adjusting its 13D expanded definition of group for the purpose of disclosure to require new disclosure when an investor shares non-public information about an upcoming 13D filing, or maybe once they cross the 13D, but they don't have to disclose it yet, with another investor who subsequently buys shares. So, you know, XYZ activist calls up another activist and says, you know, we just crossed 5%, or, you know, it's going to disclose in five, I guess now it'll be 5 days and before it'd be 10 days. the other activist investor or sympathetic investor, you know, buys a big stake too, let's say 3%. So now, based on this, they would have to file a group 13D where, you know, maybe it would be the 5% plus 3%, would be 8%, and the two investors would have to file under 113D. This is kind of the perfect world, I guess, from the company point of view. But, you know, I feel like there's been not a lot of enforcement of these group issues, and people have been skeptical about whether the SEC would really be able to stop these kind of group formations. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think it is a good start. It goes at the heart of the issue. If this was a tender offer instead of a 13D, and you being the tender offer disclosed to somebody that you were about to launch a tender offer, and mm-hmm. that person bought stock, they mm-hmm. would be violating the SEC rules. Mm-hmm. This simply makes a parallel point to, you know, the rules allow you to accumulate up to 5% before you make disclosure.
Right.
Okay? If you want to team up with somebody, then you have to make the disclosure for both of you.
Right.
If you whisper in somebody's ear that you're going to, that you're buying company X and that you're going to be filing a 13D or that you're accumulating or something along those lines, so that person, knowing that what your strategy is, thinks that it's some easy money by going out in the market and buying the stock, yes, that should be prohibited. For years, we've complained about, you know, activists all in the same building or the same zip code, all seemingly accumulating at the same time, but mm-hmm. claiming that they never talk to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, this is to deal with the problem of signaling. Mm-hmm. And the SEC says, if you want to signal somebody, they're going to be part of your 13D group. If you don't want to signal, then don't signal. It's totally within the control of the 13D filer. They decide whether or not they're willing to share that information. Is it going to make a compliance headache for some companies? Absolutely. Some traders are going to have real compliance issues because if they bought something after being told by somebody else that they were accumulating, this could conceivably trigger the 13D obligation. Will this put anybody out of business? Maybe some guys who should have been put out of business years ago, but it's not going to put an activist out of business. And frankly, if it makes the activist less powerful because the activist doesn't have a friends and family program with everybody showing up at the same time as them buying in parallel, well, then frankly, the disclosure is working. The market is allowed to trade. The market's allowed to react without certain parts of the market getting a benefit that's not available to everybody else in the market.
Is there like a questionnaire or something that you would suggest that the SEC attach to this to maybe make it tougher?
Look, I think that the SEC will have to decide exactly how to deal with it. One way to deal with this is by making a line item disclosure requirement that have you disclosed to anybody outside of your, you know, advisors or broker or your firm itself, your intentions to file a 13D or your intentions to accumulate the company stock. Yeah, you know, look, if a broker knew that you were accumulating and bought in parallel, that broker would be misusing information. The broker is, if somebody's told, why should that be legal? That they were told, then they can buy different with information asymmetry without the rest of the market knowing. All it says is, all they're trying to say is make it a level playing field. And I don't think it's such an unlevel playing field to say if you disclose this to a bunch of people and they bought, that you should be responsible for filing as a group because you told them, presumably for some good reason, whether you think they'd support your efforts, whether you thought they could make some money along the way, whatever the reason, you had a reason for telling them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most stock pickers don't go out and tell the world what their top stock picks are. Okay. Mm-hmm. Most activists tell the world what their picks are after they've made their accumulation. Mm-hmm. For the activists that are doing this, you know, with really acting in concert with other parties by, you know, just being silent, but saying it's just parallelism. It's not, we don't have an agreement or anything, mm-hmm. but they have an information asymmetry that they're capitalizing on. All mm-hmm. that would do is level the playing field again and tell the investing world, look, you have the same opportunity as everybody else to trade on the information that such and such has a 13D on file. Because it's on file, it's public to everybody at once. If you tip people ahead of time, right now, arguably those people are not a group. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a question of whether, you know, you're acting in concert, it otherwise gets picked up by their 13D. This shouldn't be very controversial. It's not like we're going to prevent good investors, the pension funds, others from doing this. This isn't, those aren't the people who are getting whispered to. They get whispered to people with a, a Connecticut zip code or all in the same building downtown on Broadway. There's a reason for it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I was watching a webinar not too long ago where I was very confused. A top person working at a large index fund was very upset about the idea that derivatives would be captured by 13D. I couldn't figure out why. It seems like that index fund has a big active investment section that they feel could be captured by this as well. But I guess I wanted to just ask you, just to wrap up, I get a lot of different perspectives, very heated debates on both sides of like the origins, the Williams Act. And, this wasn't intended to capture activist investors. In a sense, activist investors weren't around. It was the hostile bidders and the corporate raiders when this emerged. And that's why it was 10 days was not, not about the technology. And then, of course, I get the other perspective that Gary Gensler talks about, which is, technology has developed. You don't need to send someone to Washington every time you file a 13D anymore, that it's much easier to make these disclosures. So why are we waiting so long to have the disclosure once you cross a 5% threshold? So I just want to, get your thoughts on this. I feel like the technology angle is a valid angle that, the situation, we're much more modern now.
Back in 1968, the Williams Act was originally intended to deal with midnight raids, where there was an information asymmetry that people could buy a bunch of stock before anybody knew the control had passed.
Right.
And that was meant to deal with both bids and accumulations of shares.
Okay.
Activists were not in anybody's eye back then. It wasn't a separate asset class. There may have been some people that practiced it, but when the Williams Act was first adopted, most people don't know this, but the threshold was 10% and it got lowered to 5% because 10% was seen as too high.
Mm-hmm.
So back then, there were no fax machines, mm-hmm. okay? There were no electronic filings, okay? You had two choices. You take your 13D and put it in the mail,
mm-hmm.
or you could hire some fancy law firm that would, instead of putting it in the mail, put a person on a plane to Washington to make the filing.
Wow.
Okay, we don't need to do that anymore. And therefore, the information asymmetry that exists has been exacerbated by this technology, because all the technology allows people to trade faster and quicker and everything else. But if you don't change the disclosure requirements to go along with it, you're really solving for the wrong issue. And I think that the Williams Act was well-intentioned. It does not take into account technological advances. You don't need the Pony Express anymore to get your filing to Washington. You don't need to even put somebody on a plane anymore. You can push a button.
Right.
Your 13D gets filed. The other area where there was some discussion about fixing it is the whole 13F area, where you don't find out until 45 days after the end of the quarter but what large investors' positions were 45 days ago.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't make a lot of sense either. And I think that as part of this, that's something else that should be fixed. But I'm not trying to create too big a wish list, because then nothing happens. But today was a good day from my perspective for corporate America, because it is going to eliminate, if these rules are adopted, it will eliminate the information advantages that activists use to take advantage of public companies. It will not stop activism. If activism will continue, activists will still make lots of money. They may have to change some of their tactics, but what it will allow people to do is that it will allow people to trade their securities with better information, because they'll know what's going on, as opposed to trading and finding out after the fact what's been going on and that you couldn't participate in because you had no knowledge of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it is true that some SEC proposals just kind of wither and die and never are adopted. And it's also true that the SEC seems to be introducing a proposal on something every week. So it'll be to see if this is adopted. I think it seems very likely this is adopted. It's something Gary Gensler has talked a lot about. I could think of at least three separate incidences where he's talked that this was coming. So it's no surprise that it's here today. And we'll be interested to see how this plays out. You've been listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast with Ron Orl, and we've been talking to Wachtell's David Katz. Thank you, David, for taking the time.
Ron, thank you very much. And I would just tell people, they may see some move in the Senate as well on some of these disclosure bills because of this proposal, because there's some parallelism there that I think is going on that you might want to look into and would be of interest to some of your readers.
Yes, definitely. I will check that out. I appreciate it. All right. Thank you, David.